Well, hello again. Frieda Morrison here. Welcome to Scots Radio. And this programme, Far Wi Dinna, Dachl or Danner. Well, maybe Trachl and Wanner, but that's just what happens with folk like us. In this jam-packed edition, we're at the first National Conference on Scots in the Classroom, Fae Education Scotland, at Stirling. For Scotland's Minister for Languages, Dr. Alistair Allen, launched the Scottish Government's policy for the Scots language. We find out fits in it. And in the lead-up to the review of the BBC Charter, how Dr. Allen views the future of broadcasting in Scotland. More of that in a minute, also in this edition. Speaking to Bruce Ewenson, Scots Language Coordinator for Shetland, about that conference at Stirling, and writer Matthew Fitt on Itchy-Coo's 50th anniversary. And a wah, haina wah for Stirling, we're at the discovery of a Pictish royal palace in Rhynie in Aberdeenshire. And our resident rumbler, Steve Byrne, is back with apples. We're spinning like a peary, but better that way. It gets you to the hoose. Far div we start, back at Stirling University. For around 200 teachers and council delegates and associated organisations gathered for Education Scotland's first national conference on Scots in the classroom. Right at the start, Dr. Alistair Allen, our Minister for Languages, launched the Scottish Government's policy for the Scots language. Dr. Allen not only outlined what the policy focused on, but in the run-up to the BBC Charter, I asked him about his views on the future of broadcasting in Scotland. First, though, the policy.
Well, in a way, it's a set of ambitions for the Scottish Government and a recognition of the fact that Scots is, you know, the three languages in Scotland, three leads in Scotland, three native tongues that we have, and we should mind it when it comes to policy on whether it's education or broadcasting or anything else.
But how can we put that into nuts and bolts, into what's happening on the ground?
Well, the Scottish Government is doing things. Obviously, folk, it's here today. Among them, there's the Scots ambassadors, and for by that, there's the language coordinators of the skills. There are a couple of examples of things that the Scottish Government has done for the Scots language, and we want to do more things like that.
Could there be more done about broadcasting or within broadcasting, do you think?
There could certainly be. Obviously, the now the Scottish Government doesn't have any poor our broadcasting. That's something that's under the wing of the UK government. Having said all that, though, I think Obadi the now is the view that we have a new charter coming up for the BBC. There is a chance to be thinking about what can we do for broadcasting in Scotland. How can Scotland make more programmes? And among there, I would hope that there would be programmes of Scots.
I'm going to ask you, if other folk are asking me to ask, so here's me asking it, that it would BBC Alba, is there any chance of the remit of that being changed for Scots as well?
No, BBC Alba's remit is for the Gaelic language, so I don't think there needs to be a competition between Scots and Gaelic. I think the bigger question is where does Scots fit into the other channels that the BBC runs and other companies runs in Scotland? And with charter renewal, one of the things we're talking about is can Scotland no hae a channel of its own, a channel broadcasting in Scotland making programmes? If we had that, we would have programmes in Scots, I'm quite sure, and there would be pressure for them to be there.
Would there be a link there? We're at that conference I knew in Stirling University, we Education Scotland, would there be links there with education?
I've no doubt about that. I think Education Scotland's been doing a lot of things. I mentioned one or two of them about what's happening with the skills. There'll be all sorts of pressures from here on in round about materials for yes of the skills for by. And I would like to think, you know, a time coming when we have a bigger broadcasting service in Scotland, that there will be programmes made that'll be yes for the skills and all.
We had a meeting when we first started Scots Radio, Scots Language Radio. It's run about 2 years ago now. Have you seen any changes in attitudes and how folk viewed Scots language in Scotland? Have you seen the hell idea that Scots is actually a language changing?
I think there is more understanding. I think the surveys that was done about attitudes among folk showed that folk was, for the most part, was positive about the Scots language and agreed that it was heir and peer to our linguistic heritage and something that we should think well of. There was an interesting exception to that, and that was at folk with bairns below the age of 8 or 9. That group of parents wasn't as a share that was a good thing. So we had some convincing there today, I think. But all the other age groups seem to be supportive of the Scots language. So I think there's a lot still to be done, but I did see a difference. I don't think you'll see the hostility among the teaching profession towards the Scots language that there was in times past. If anything, I'm seeing a kind of hunger among teachers to find out mair.
This is what the days are about, isn't it?
And this is what the days are about here now.
Scotland's Minister for Languages, Dr. Alistair Allan. So, after the policy launch, it was down to the business of the conference, topic and focus, Scots in the Classroom. Introducing that was Deputy Director of Education, Jane Renton. FA introduced Scots Language Coordinator, Simon Hall, for Orkney. FA launched the new video on the history of the Scots language. Excellent it is an hour. Author James Robertson delivered the keynote address, and then the delegates went their own ways into the various workshops. Fit a day, and I think it was one of the best conferences I've had the pleasure of attending. There was a buzz and a lot of enthusiasm, and as one of the teachers said after, I came here curious, needing to learn, and I'm gonna wa enthralled and enthused. Well, fit a niece. So, fit happened. Fit was the day of our boot. A question I picked to Scots coordinator, Bruce Ewenson, for Shetland.
Today is the very first Scots in Schools National Conference. The 32 local authorities were invited. Various practitioners who are doing good work with Scots have been invited. The relative sort of organisations that have a hand in Scots language, from the Scots Language Centre to HEQ to Scots Language Dictionaries, everybody is represented here.
So Abdi's here, but what did you take out of the day yourself, Bruce? Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the most important things happened in the morning when MSP Alistair Allan launched the Scottish Government's Scots Language Policy. That's an important step in raising the status of Scots. I said it is acknowledged as one of the three Indigenous languages of Scotland alongside English and Gaelic. So he and Scots gaining equal status there is very important, not just the work that I do in education, but also in terms of public life using Scots and the government's endorsement of added dialects of Scots, the one that's most closest to my heart, obviously Shetland dialect, the dialect used where I come from, and that I want my bairns growing up speaking and using in school. So today I see as being a right positive in.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all very well saying, okay, we're going to have recognition and we're going to have heightened status for the Scots language. But will that make any difference to folks' attitudes, do you think?
Folks' attitudes, I suppose, might be more persuaded by action. And the policy contains an appendix that is specifically for Education Scotland and our action plan for how we're going to positively influence Scots language across the country or the coming future. And that's something that I'll be involved in and hope that as many others get involved in as possible, because what we need is teachers, bairns, parents and folk for the community thinking about Scots, speaking about Scots and speaking in Scots, and that means added dialects and regional varieties. So wherever you are in the country, today means something for you.
See, I constantly come across folk that are saying, but fit is Scots. And I get the feeling that folk didn't ken fit Scots is.
No, a lot of folk dinna, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. That's because it is a minority language with a history of a lot of oppression. A lot of folk might have think that they could have can it slang in the past. Today is one step towards hopefully removing that and everybody kinding to treat it with respect, pride and as a another branch of our sort of linguistic tree here in Scotland that bairns use, bring to school, lick to learn, and do will when learning in Scots. Kind of anecdotally, if you work in schools, you will see it.
It helps.
It helps. Like it's very good.
Mm-hmm. Going back to this attitude again, it goes on inside you when you hear folks saying, aye, but is it just slang?
That was very foreign to me, coming from Shetland, where we have a real pride in our dialect, and it's held very dearly and very highly, both by Shetland folk and folk who are either visiting or new to the Isles. So when you come down to the look at the sort of central belt in some areas around the lowlands, hearing folk say Scots is slang and, you know, no wanting to use it, then that was a bit of a shock to me. But that doesn't mean that that folk isn't a Scots speaker. It just means that they're not maybe aware of the benefits it can bring to their life, to their parents' life, and to a sense of national identity.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that happens a lot is they think that the only Scots that exist is Doric.
Yeah.
It starts and stops with Doric.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else out to the northeast mm-hmm. where the folk could speak Doric. Mm-hmm. You must have come across that as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Doric, the Caithness speakers, Orkney and Shetland, are the sort of four main areas where we're not in the habit of referring to ourselves as speaking Scots. I refer to myself as being a Shetland speaker. Mm-hmm. An Orcadian would say they speak Orkney. Aberdeenshire folk might say they speak Doric. So the idea the dialects of Scotland coming together for a sort of greater good is a kind of new idea in some ways. It's no commonly held by the public, but that's something that we want to change, because whether you're a Doric speaker, a Border Scots speaker or a Shetland speaker, we are far better working together on this.
And it's our Scots.
It's our Scots, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's our Scots, all the sense there. For Bruce Ewenson, Scots Language Coordinator based in Lerwick, Shetland. You're listening to Scots Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. I'm joined in the studio by Steve Byrne, back for his holidays. Steve, you've been listening to that. That's your take on first the Minister, Alistair Allen, and then Bruce Ewenson. A combination there. There's something half important going on.
Aye, I think that's right. I think first, folk, can we're half a spoilt in this programme, because we speak about Scots and the conferences and the coordinators an half a lot, but just think back a few years. You ever heard a Minister of the Scottish Government speaking to you in Scots?
No.
Do you think that in itself is just an awful leap for it? I think that's something to just ponder on there. But I think the message been sent when I saw the policy coming out in terms of the recognition and the equal status, the acknowledgement of that, is still awful important. And of course, we're speaking about we have to get action to gang along with it. But I think first and foremost, we have to get that put in black and white that the government recognises that. That's emotionally for folk, I think that's an awful strong mm-hmm. statement.
That question I put to Bruce, does it surprise him that folk still think that Scots is slang? I mean, I have sat in committee meetings and folk have turned to me and said, just be honest now, Frieda, Scots is slang, isn't it?
What?
And it's like a cold shiver goes down you.
Aye. I think what he said, the notion of a linguistic tree was awful interesting, because it's folk are used to languages being richt or rang. Mm-hmm. When you learn a language at the school, if you're learning French or whatever, it's richt or rang. You didn't necessarily learn, you know, you'd learn standard French or standard German at the school. You wouldn't have learned any of the dialects necessarily. And folk, I think in that sense, are used to thinking of languages as being kind of open and shut. You can, it's either, it is richt or it isn't. And I think the linguistic tree, the idea that something has lots of branches and is fluid in terms of that, is often important. And something that was in our house, we were having a blether about it. If you ask a linguist what's any of the features of a language, well, it's dialects. So if Scots isn't a language, how come there's so many dialects?
On that point, we'll take time out for the conference at Stirling for a bit of music. This is for Session A9's new album, CAD, Session A9. Just after their successful national tour, this is the Miller Adron. Thank you. The Miller are drawn for Session A9's new album, just Cad Session A9. Mair for that later. You're listening to Scots Radio. This is Freda Morrison. With me in the studio is folklorist Steve Byrne. Back to Education Scotland's National Conference in Stirling. And among the delegates at the conference were representatives and organisations presenting their particular side of the culture and link with the languages. Among them, writer and teacher Matthew Fitt. Far away, writer James Robertson set up the successful publishing company Itchy Coo in 2002. 13 years later, they celebrate the publication of 50 new books in Scots for readers of all ages. Matthew, tell me about Itchy Coo at 50.
Itchy Coo at 50, well, James Robertson and myself started this mad venture about 2000. Mm. And it took 2-3 years to get the whole money sorted and everything, and we were just about gearing up. But once we got the first books out, and we did 8 books in the first year and 8 books in the second year, so 60 in the first 2 years, the response for the public was, and particularly for schools, was just tell us it was all worthwhile. We were told there was a review of the Itchy Coo project when it was first launched, and when we issued our first 8 books, and Liam McIlvany said, "A brave venture, but it will fail."
And it did, eh?
It did, no.
50 years old.
No. And his son, Liam McIlvany, the writer, buys the books for his own bairns. So I think come back.
I'm reading this little bit of spiel here on the flyer. It says, "Itchy Coo. At Itchy Coo, we mark the best books in Scots for bairns and weans of our ages. And we're proud to announce that our 50th book is Mr. Mingan by David Williams." Tell me about Mr. Mingan.
Well, the fact that our 50th title is a David Williams book shows that we're not stopped, we're still going forward. And David Williams is the top author for children at the moment. His popularity is absolutely massive with the Wains. And so I saw this book in a bookshop a couple of years ago. I had picked it up and I thought, James, this is about a clatty old man and his so obviously the potential for Scots was there. The vocabulary just sat up and you could smell the vocabulary as I was reading it in the English version. And but it's more than that. Roald Dahl, we translated Roald Dahl for, and Roald Dahl is great and very moral, but David Williams, his books are more, they address more social issues.
More gritty, you think?
So I think that's why he's as popular as he is the new. And of course, where I was looking for ways into schools and ways into kids bookshelves. And if they're reading David Williams and if they're reading books like that, then that's the books that we want to find out.
So he's written Mr. Stink.
He wrote Mr. Stink, yes.
Right. Now, that's just ideal for bairns. I don't have to track bairns or our ages.
Yeah.
They're just young bairns at primary school. They've got to go in there. So Mr. Stink, is it... I was listening to James Robertson earlier on doing the keynote address.
Yeah.
And he was saying, as you're writing for the characters in Scots, they change characters. Is that what happens to Mr. Stink?
I would think so. We've had to play around, because a lot of the words that David Williams uses are English, but they're also American. And because that's the current English language, that's what bairns use. So I hate to try and find ways of making the same thing in Scots, doing the same thing in Scots. So loser caused me an awful lot of trouble.
How the hell fits Scots for loser?
Well, it's now Lavihead. And I was reading this to some bairns yesterday, and they were because they can't the English text. They all can't the English text, and whenever I ask them what a word means, they go immediately back to the English text in their heads, and they were delighted with Lavihead. In fact, as the whole thing was packing up and the kids were going up the road, I heard them, yes, the word Lavihead a couple of times. So if in some small way the word loser, which is, well, both of them are negative, but at least one of them is Scottish. But the characters do change. They do change, but they didn't change that much, because the bairns, I don't think that a book like Mr. Mingan, I want them to change that much because I want them to be still familiar to the Bairns. It's the language I want them to be the main difference. It's the language that I want them to be. I would like my readers, my young readers, to be engaging with and learning and absorbing and getting that sense that it's, if it's in a David Williams book, then it must be positive, it must be good, it must be cool. And aye, so that's what.
Right, you've done that in. What you working on now? What's your next bit?
next thing here is this is
another David Williams.
Well, this is David Williams, Billionaire Boy, which and I was asking some of the Bairns yesterday if what they thought the name of the book might be in Scots, and it was in Dundee, so it was Billionaire Laddie. Was their interpretation, which is absolutely valid, but of course Emlyn was looking for the alliteration. So to balance up James's book, The Gruffalo's Wayne, which kind of left out the East Coast a wee bit, Billionaire Bairn wrote the title of this year.
Billionaire
Bairn. And this one is about a laddie who's got, he's from a poor background because his father makes kludgy roll, but his father invents a whole new technique. Double-sided, one wheat on one side and dry on the other, and so the feather makes billions and billions and billions of pounds, and the laddie moves from a council house to 18 houses and enjoys this lifestyle which he describes as being idiotically rich, but he can't make any friends at his posh school that he's sent to, because the laddies there all ken that his money has come for the kludgy roll. So he wants to go and make a friend in the local comprehensive, in the local secondary school, and that's where the story rolls for there. He tries to keep secret the fact that he's a billionaire, and he's got all this crazy gear in his house, and it's about friendship and the worth of a person, and again it's David Williams' social issue that he explores in the book, and it's also very funny.
I'm looking forward to it. Matthew, I can, the workshops are coming out in a minute now, so we're going to have to stop, but to have a fine meeting you at last.
Fine meeting you too, Frieda.
Speak again. Writer and teacher and publisher Matthew Fitt on Itchy Coo at 50. And just before we leave Education Scotland's National Conference in Stirling, coordinator Simon Hall launched the new History of the Scots Language film at the conference, and it's well worth looking at. It'll answer a lot of the questions that folk have and clarify a lot of the misunderstandings. Congratulations to Diane Anderson and Simon for putting this together. Mayor Music, this is Jean Redpath, wee Wally.
Wally's gained to Melville Castle, bits and spurs and all, to bid the ladies off farewell afore he gaed awa'. For Wally's young and blithe and bonny, lewd by in and all. The lassie's day when Wally gans awa'. The first he met was Lady Kate, who led him through the hall, and wi' a sad and sorry heart she let the tear down fa'. Beside the fire stood Lady Grace, said ne'er a word of awe. She thought that she was share of him before he gaed awa'. Then ben the hoose come Lady Bell, gaed troth he need nae craw. Maybe the lad will fancy me and disappoint ye a'. Then doon the stair come Lady Jean, the floor among them a'. Lassies, trust in Providence and you'll get husbands a'. As on the steedy road of war they gathered round the door, he gaily waved his bonnet blue, they set up sic a roar. Their cries, their tears brought Wally back, he kissed them in and a'. Oh, lassies, bide the like him came and sign a waddy a'. As Mally Lee come down the street, her cap out gently, she goes to look behind her to see her negligee. And we're all gone east and west, all gone a'ye, we're all gone east and west, according to Mally Lee. Oh, doon along the Cannon Gate, where bows o' wealthy gree, and Bonnie in turn round to look at Bonnie Mally Lee. And we're all gone east and west, all gone a'ye, we're all gone east and west, according to Mally Lee. And when she reached the palace porch, there lounged nobles three, and Elkin thought his cater mega drab to Mally Lee. And we're all gone east and west, all gone a'ye, we're all gone east and west, according to Mally Lee. as haw a comely sight they see. But nin was there sae bright and raw as bonny Mally Lee. But heel and Brodie fleert them all wi' a brunt and hand to her knee. He's one for aye the het and haw no bonny Mally Lee. And we're all gone east and west, all gone aye a gee. We're all gone east and west, a good the Mally Lee. We're all gone east and west, we're all gone aye a gee. We're all gone east and west, a good the Mally Lee.
Jean Redbath with Mally Lee. Are gone east and west. Well, we're going north again to Aberdeenshire this time. For a team of archaeologists from Aberdeen University have maybe solved a thousand-year-old mystery. They've come half a near to unravelling the story of the Rhynie Man, a six-foot Pictish stone carving that was first uncovered by a farmer, Plunies Parks, in 1978. The carving shows a manny carrying an axe out his shoulder. But this new dig, up at a site just outside Rhynie, has unearthed some fascinating clues. Rhynie folk might be related to royalty. I'll say that again. Rhynie folk might be related to royalty. Well, a giant senior lecturer and dig leader, Dr. Gordon Noble, looking over the site, watching the diggers, patiently scraping away the muck, digging into time aside the craa stean. Gordon paints the picture.
We're just outside the village of Rhynie. In Aberdeenshire, on a lovely sunny day, and we're just standing in a field just on the south side of the village next to the craa stean,
which is the standing stean.
That's right, yeah, it's a Pictish symbol stone. It's still standing in its original location.
Okay, we're looking at the dig, the Pictish dig.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a name for this particular Pictish dig? The Crastean Dig or something like that.
Yeah, it's called the Rhynie Environs Archaeological Project, or REAP for short.
I'm glad
Sounds
you said that.
Sounds a bit sinister.
Oh. Okay, what are you looking for? We're looking at a hell heap of folk. Some of them are doing holes, gently pulling away the sand, going up to the riddling out the buckets of sand they're collecting. What are you looking for, Gordon?
Well, we've been digging here for a few years now. We started in 2011. We're really interested in Rhynie for a couple of reasons. This place name comes from early Celtic "ri" for king, which suggests it was an important place back in Pictish period. And also it's got a whole group of these Pictish standing steans as well.
Uh-huh.
So there's one still standing in its original position, the craa stean. And we've been digging around that for the last few years. And we've basically found that the stean is standing just at the entranceway to a 5th to 6th century Pictish fort.
That's AD.
AD, yeah. It's about 1,500 years ago.
Right.
So that's quite exciting. And we're getting great finds as well. We're getting amphora imported from the eastern Mediterranean.
Amphora? What's amphora?
Big storage jars that were made in the kind of late Roman world in the 6th century.
But how did it get here?
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it? Probably coming up to the Irish Sea, west coast, from Mediterranean traders, and that material only turns up at high status sites of this period.
So would this have been a royal palace then?
We think so, yeah, we've got that place name. Not necessarily a royal palace, but certainly a high status royal site of some description. We also have a cemetery.
Doing that there?
Well, no, down towards the village, we found it before. And when the village road was being built in the 19th century, they found lots of human remains down there. And we've dug down in that part of the village as well, and we found Pictish graves with skeletons still inside, and we've dated those to the same time period, about 450.
So that cemetery down there has nothing to do with the palace up here?
Well, possibly. The church down there is dedicated to Mo Luagh, who was an Irish saint.
Mo Luagh, now he discovered Lismore, didn't he?
He did, that's right. So he's an early saint. I think he's late 6th century. So we might potentially have an early church down here as well.
Did Mo Luagh have to do something with Chapel of Geary as well?
That's right, yeah. There's a lot of dedications to Mo Luagh in Aberdeenshire. So it's a really interesting. And
connection, aye.
Yeah, interesting connections with the west coast there.
Right, back to what you've found, because I suppose what it's all about is what you're going to find and what you're going to read into the earth.
Yeah.
In the timescale. What else have you found?
We found a glass bead, a beautiful spiral glass bead.
Glass?
Yeah, so that's probably coming from long distance connections as well. So
I was going to ask, did the Picts ken how to make glass?
Well, we're not entirely sure about that. It looks like they're largely recycling glass from the late Roman world and, you know, making new things out of material that they had, you know, traded with other peoples and the like.
So we are under the misapprehension that the Picts were fairly crude in their art forms, crude in their civilization, and crude in how they live. But you're saying that, no, they're actually very sophisticated.
That's right. We had folk here in the 5th and 6th century drinking Mediterranean wine out of glass beakers coming from France. So
it's amazing.
That.
Is this the most exciting finds you found?
It's definitely up there, yeah. I mean, it's really significant because we have so few sites from this time period that actually tell us much about this really crucial period, you know, 5th and 6th centuries.
But you can see why, well, I'm assuming, in my naive way, why they would have picked here, because you can see doing the valley there, doing the how towards Huntly, and it's got peaks up there. You've got is it a vitrified fort up there?
Yeah, Tappanorth, yeah.
Tappanorth up there. That's a different generation,
yeah,
it's a different era.
Yeah, it's probably a bit older. Uh-huh. Maybe, you know, in the Iron Age, but may well have been reused in the Pictish period as well. So, and there's two other forts that are probably Pictish as well. So you've got a whole landscape really here that's really important.
You know, you've got the steep hills, you've got the valleys, and you've got the farmers' deans that the farmers have done for thousands
of
years.
Yeah. So you've got a combination of rich agricultural soils, and then you're right on the edge of the uplands here where you can imagine, you know, your Pictish kings going off on their hunting parties, that kind of thing. So.
Fantastic place. Mm-hmm. And last night, of course, we were at the Cayley, the Dig Cayley.
That's
what it's called, the Digger's Cayley. Mm-hmm. And a great strip the willow we did as well. Long strip the willow. But we were walking back over the stubble fields afterwards, and the moon was a full moon last night. And you can imagine that this is what happened thousands and thousands of years ago, folk walking across the fields and looking at the same moon.
Right, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's a great landscape, really, to start to imagine what it was like in the Pictish period. And, you know, our archaeology over the coming years will hopefully paint, you know, a fantastic picture of what this landscape looked like back in the Pictish period.
What's the buzz that you could do to this, Gordon?
Just finding out about the past, I guess, and finding out about how people lived in previous generations. And, you know, it's fascinating, really. You know, there's lots of people really interested in the Picts and their art and all that, but it's just great to actually begin to put that in context and understand why these steens are standing in this field today and what they related to. Yeah.
There's a lot of theories, isn't there?
Yeah.
One last question. If folk wanted to find out more about it, is there books you would direct them to? Books of your own, for instance?
There's a few publications we've done already. We have a Facebook page, Northern Picts. If people search for that, they can keep track on the progress of the project. And we're always posting stuff on there that people can read. Books. There's not a huge amount of books out there that are good and accessible. Sally Foster has a book called Picts, Gaels and Scots, which just came out, a revised version, couple of months ago, so that's probably a good source to start.
Right, well, it's not quite as blustery as the last few days here, but that looks great. How many folk have you got here digging?
Oh, today we must have, I don't know, 15 odd, 16 odd.
And there's been hundreds of folk coming up to see if it's going on.
Yeah, we had more than 200 folk yesterday come to visit the dig and sample Rhynie Women's baking and hospitality.
You've got the Rhynie Man, of course.
That's right, we've got the Rhynie Man from the site, who's this fantastic carving of a Pict with big teeth carrying this axe. And then we have the local community group, Rhynie Women, who does lots of community events surrounding
like
our digs.
Last night. And making bonnie loaves and lovely
fantastic,
Pictish pizzas. I like the pictures.
That's right, yeah.
Pictures as well.
We're very spoilt on site.
So far do you go for here?
Well, we're going to backfill all this in the next week or so. And then hopefully be back next year.
Next year, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe join you there, see if else you can find. I'm going to want to look at the bead, the blue bead, isn't it? It's a blue
bead.
That's
right, yeah.
That Irvin Ross found, I think.
That's right.
Thanks, Gordon.
Grand. Thank you.
Dr. Gordon Noble, tell us about the significant discovery up at the Pictish site and the dig at Rhynie. Only the stones remain. Music again? I was across at Ardnamurchan recently at a fiddle festival at Resipol campsite, Fit a Time Wihid, and my big thank you to the organisers, led by Rory and Karen, and tutors Sarah Jane, Matthew, Charlie McKerran and Colin McLeod. This is Colin playing Eno's tracks we learned in the class, and Colin is playing with Rory Sinclair here, recorded in Melbourne, Australia. I think I can safely say we weren't quite as good as this. This is the Glen Tilt Set. McLeod with Rory Sinclair for their album Roman Free, recorded in Melbourne. And Colin came all the way from Melbourne to join us at the Resipol Fiddle Festival recently. It was a magical time, playing fiddles just on the shores of Loch Soonert. Thank you to Colin and Abdi. And back for his holidays, looking weel and rested, is our folklorist and resident rumbler, Steve Byrne. I almost said, looking weel and rested, we'll soon sort that out.
I was going to say, you're needing new specs.
You notice my specs?
It's
my Dame Edna's.
They're perfect for the radio.
I got them for a petrol pump station somewhere in Elgin, you know, it's multicoloured. Right. Fitz been mulling round your lugs this month, your chosen topic.
Apples, as you mentioned earlier on. You kind of apples and a things local are kind of twa interests of mine, and in this case they're kind of combined. I come from Arbroath, and we've spoken a wee bit about it now and again.
The
Auslan, Arbroath Pippin. And it was just really a flag up to folk that there's all these Scottish apples out and about there that you can get your hands on this time of year.
Like, give some names.
Well, saying about local, I mean, there's a lot of apples that have got names to do with places. There's pippins for Ayr, Scotland. There's a Galloway pippin, East Lothianine, Cambusnethan. There's things called the White Melrose, Stirling Castle, Tower of Glams, and they've all got a history to them. And there are 19th century varieties. They've been kind of...
What was the Inca that the boy got shot?
The Bloody Plowman.
Aye.
That was a boy in the Carse of Gowrie. It was first recorded in 1883, and it's supposed to be that the Plowman was caught stealing apples and was shot by the gamekeeper. And his wife, for some reason or other, had thrown in a wheen of apples into the midden, and for some reason they grew there, and you know, the seedlings became this Bloody Plowman apple. So it's a good story.
So we're working up to Halloween, of course, this month, and we're kind of looking at the legends and stories were sorted out, rune apples. And before I go into the legends and stories, is that an apple I see afore me and sitting on the table?
It is. It's out of my own garden in East Lothian. There was an apple nursery near that far before we're recording the day in Pilrig in Edinburgh, just boots, maybe 5 minutes walk from here. There was a man called James Grieve, and you've maybe seen a James Grieve apple going about. You kind of get a lot of the Scottish varieties these days. They're going to keep that well, they're going to transport, so you'll no see them in the supermarkets, but some of these kind of local organic shops and I think sometimes hay them. And
it's a good apple, James Grieve.
It's a bonny apple, aye. 1893 it came into being, and he was a nurseryman doing around sort of the Leith Pilrig area in Edinburgh. And it's actually one of the most popular apples for folk that wants to grow them in their garden. And they're half a popular in Central Europe as well. I first found out about it in the middle of a market square in Germany.
I can't imagine if it's John Downey or James Grieve. I'm maybe getting John Downey mixed up with somebody I can, if they're Blair Dowry. But I mind asking your pal and mine, Willie Duncan, if it would be the best apple to plant if I was going to try and create an orchard, and he said it's either James Grieve or John Downey because it withstands the frost better.
Aye, and I bumped into Willie a few weeks back at a sort of mutual friends thing, but he was saying that the apples this year, as folk probably kins with the weather, are about 12 weeks late, and half a sma, as you can see for this scene, it's no much bigger, it's not even the size of a tennis bar, and it's just been the way it's been this year.
So are you going to cut it? I mean, this is a precious, one of your precious apples for your ain tree.
Indeed, I've got about a dozen for you. It was just last year that we planted it, so we're chuffed to get a dozen apples off it, so I thought we would would here go live on air just for the radio.
Right, cut your apple. Here we go.
Right,
he's cutting his apple.
Here's a bit of funny.
That's not a big apple bit.
Well, it's not a big apple.
Now, apart from all that, apart from when we're munching into your apple, it's not very sweet. it's really nice. That's an apple. Richie has actually brought in a jar whose aim handmade. Is it bramble and apple jelly or just apple jelly?
Well, that's just crab apple.
Crab apples,
and it'll certainly redress your sugar balance.
Aye. That's true.
Right. Basically sugar.
And he's actually going to have the trouble of coming in with oatcakes and cheese, and I put a wee bit of jam. See, I've got the jam on top of this for you, so we can... Here, munch of that. There's Richie's crab apple jelly. And you were saying it's really easy to make, then?
It's easy.
You need a jelly bag, eh?
I needed a jelly bag. The hard bit's getting the juice to make the jelly. You've got to let it drip overnight through a jelly bag. And you're enjoying that munch, aren't you? I'm really gutted I'm in the other room here.
You're
not
getting a bit.
I'm missing out.
That's smashing.
It's making the juice, and I just make it like you make a jam. It's a pound of sugar to a pint of juice. And off you go. You just let it go and then you jar it up and you're laughing.
You're laughing. This is your granny's recipe, of course.
That's it.
And your granny tells you need to squeeze the bags.
Then you squeeze the bag, you'll cloud your jelly.
Aye.
If you squeeze the bag. So just let gravity do her work, you know.
I think so.
Aye. She says it's an half a sclater.
That's it. It's a sleester in her own words.
Fit was the word again she used this month.
An affy sleester.
That's a sleester.
And these are crab apples out the garden here.
That's right. It's out my tree and just in the back garden behind the studio.
Smashing.
So first time it's fruited in ages as well.
What's it like? Is it really?
It's half a bunny.
Can I tell him if it's horrible? Always listening.
I hope you're leaving some for me.
You're not getting any. It's really good actually. Right, Finn, we're munching into our crab apple jelly and our cheese and our oatcakes. A wee break for music again, Richie, eh?
Aye.
This is for Session A9 again, their new album of that name. And this is called Lady Montgomery.
I'm using all putting crumbs all over my blooming microphones.
Thank you.
and just as he was going up to the finish of that, of course, we took another bite of oatcake. So I apologise for not being able to speak a bit. And then, there's that Richie. But he came in the middle of that tune and pinched my oatcake. This is why I had to make another one with cheese and jam on it.
Some combination that's half a good.
It's a good combination.
He's good at your own.
Richie, by the way, just in case you were, is our soon sorter. Some folk didn't care.
Aye, not just some laddie off the street.
No, it's difficult to understand, I believe, but some folk didn't care about Richie. But he's our soon sorter.
That's me.
And we keep him in the cupboard in the lobby.
In the press.
In the press. That was the tune Up the Strood's Da Sailor Goes. A Shetland tune finishing off that set for Session A9's new album. No, we're on about apples. All about apples. We're eating apples, looking at apples, speaking about apples. It's coming up to apple time.
Even the politicians is on about apples. They have an annual apple day at the Parliament as well. I forgot to say that earlier on. So if folk wants to gang along and see some of these Scottish apples, try them out. They can do that. It's usually in October.
What's happening? What have you come across rumbling in your archives, if you did?
Well, in some parts of Scotland, the apple was thought to have a bit of influence our love affairs. So if you decided to fling an apple seed in a particular direction, depending on far it landed, that would indicate far your true love was meant to come for.
What do you mean? You just kind of fling an apple seed over your
finger? It says in the book, Steve, to ping it between your fingers, which I suppose takes a bit of technique. But
what do you mean ping it? I'm not getting this pinging apple seeds between your fingers and things.
Indeed. Okay. That's maybe why it's not so much in fashion these days.
This is heritage, I suppose.
If a couple took an apple on St John's Eve, which is around the 23rd of June, and they cut it in twa, and the seeds in each half were found to be the same in number, then it was a symbol that they would soon be married.
Seeds. You can begin to understand why television became so popular.
Bear with.
Right, but fit about Thomas Rymer.
Thomas Rymer was warned not to eat the otherworldly apple that was offered to him by the fairy queen, or he'd been unable to return to mortal life.
Right, before we go on, events coming up, what have we got to look forward to?
Well, folk normally thinks that the summer's the big time for the festivals, but I would say in a look here before they come in the day, and there's an awful lot going on in October time. One of the things that we've become used to seeing at this time of year is the Scottish International Storytelling Festival. Mm-hmm. And ilka year they have a theme, and this year it's Stories Without Borders. And they've got a lot of storytellers come over from the Middle East. So there's folk from Syria and Iran and all sorts of folk working with Scottish storytellers and great events and all sorts of things. An half abroad programme. It goes on for the 23rd October to the 1st of November. Mm-hmm. And something that ties in with the story for Riney, they're tying in with the Diggit Festival. So they're going out to Crammond on the 4th near Edinburgh and looking at the Roman history there and all that sort of thing. So lots of different kinds of events. At the Botanic Gardens, they're having a thing called the Tree Trails. So every day, over a certain period of time during the festival, they're doing walks and storytelling about different kinds of trees that they've got there. And some local things in other parts of Scotland, because the festival's not just in Edinburgh, it's all over Scotland. Kilbarchan, Warp and Weft, Kilbarchan, Woven in Story and Sang. That's taking place on the 24th of October. And same in Stirling by Alan Water, Poetry, Story and Sang. And in Glasgow, Songs and Clatter, Walking the Border. So are these kind of songs that they were placed?
Songs and Clatter, and Walking the Border.
So that's grand.
Aye, I'd like to get down to the borders.
Aye. And also we've got going on the Luminate, Scotland's Creative Aging Festival, that takes place at the Hill of October. And again, it's a nationwide thing, our Scotland. Some bra things there. And this is something that appeals to me. And there's a show called Broth. And it's basically an exploration the kind of ways of day and the traditions, the rituals today with mac and soup. Now, I mind my granny mac and soup, kale soup and all that kind of thing. So it's aimed at older folk and looking at their memories and all that. So firstly, I think, taking place at the Gaiety Studio Theatre in Ayr. And I think it gangs on to take place in other parts of Scotland. Mm. Another couple of things to mention for the same festival. We've got the Mill Girls on Tour, which is about the music, poetry and the Mill Girls, the kind of way of life and that passion, that sort of friendship and comic and tragic things going on there. That's in Glasgow. And finally, we've got Lifelines by the Thran Kras, which is a great name for a group.
Oh, the Thran Kras, that's a great name.
So an evening of short plays and monologues of all sorts of different kinds, and you can go along and see that in Livingston and West Lothian.
Busy month.
Busy month.
A busy month.
And before I go, I should mention that in Shetland there's the Accordion and Fiddle Festival taking place for the 8th to 12th of October. There are over 20 visiting artists and 35 local artists.
Wow.
And what a size of festival there are 4 days. So.
That's a cracking festival now. Busy, busy, busy month. Well, that's just about it for another episode. Find you were away on your holidays, Steve. I'll break this gently to you. Richie discovered the spick back button on his knobs and sliders desk. Are you there, Richie?
That's right, here I am.
Soon sort of. And we heard in the last programme, Richie telling us he had gien oor his ankle. I have heard heasons of folk asking about Peer Richie's ankle. Nobody has ever asked about you or me or whether we're feeling well or whatever. But here I am asking about Peer Richie's ankle. Are you sorted?
I'm sorted. Yay!
So that makes him a sorted soon sorter.
That's me.
I'm glad there's no rummer on anything in that bramble gilly, that apple gilly otherwise.
Oh, that's maybe the head of the ingredient.
Oh, anything else gone wrong with your legs, your heads, your lugs?
No, just my lugs are killing me.
His lugs are going to be warped when we get hold of him. No. Enough. Can we now direct you to our new website? New website, www.scotsradio.com. And we are new under the easy title of Scots Radio. We have an easy email, info@scotsradio.com. Getting into our Facebook page, at Scots Radio. And you can get the episodes, all the episodes of the programmes on that website, www.scotsradio.com. Join us again for Richie Werner, Steve Byrne and myself, Frieda Morrison. Bye the new. We leave you wee this track for a beautiful album of music written for the BBC Scotland's Gaelic drama series Crowdie and Cream. I'm going to try the Gaelic pronunciation. Gruas Uchada by Donald Shaw and Charlie McCarron. This is the Ceilidh Polka. Bye the new.